Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Arcade Cozy. Spoilery edition. Fireside spoileries. Spoilies.
Spoilers spoilies. In the chats.
Yeah, spoiler. It's a spoiler cast. It's what it is. My name's Chris.
My name's Corey.
And
you know, stuff.
Yeah, we're having a lovely little spoiler cast today discussing Life is Strange True Colors. I would say we will be discussing Life is Strange
Chris
True Colors.
Will be discussing it. Corey
Chris
is here
will be
as moral
yes.
support with some questions.
So when I played through True Colors, I wanted to kind of give more extensive thoughts about True Colors. But rather than just recording by myself and this being a monologue of just me, we felt it would be good opportunity to spoil the entire experience for Corey and
100%.
Let everybody experience that at the same time.
This is spoiling it for me. Let's state this. And this is also spoiling it for our listeners, but also at the same time,
yes.
As you described it in our previous episode, you got one of many endings that we'll get into later, but that also encourages me, maybe some things will be spoiled for me, but also maybe a lot of things won't be spoiled for me. So
yes,
I'm keeping that because I do intend to play this at some point.
And like Corey said, if you are here, you are one of two people. You are either myself and have played Life is Strange and would like to hear thoughts about Life is Strange True Colors, or you're Corey and you just don't care. And Chaos is your middle name, and you just want to
live life on the edge.
You just want to live your life on the edge and just.
Hey, I don't wear a case on my iPhone, so you know.
You hear that? He's a maniac.
I'm a dangerous man.
Yeah, but for Corey's sake, and for anybody who Life is Strange True Colors came out a couple of months ago. It's not like an old game. But for anybody, we'll do a little bit of a recap. So Corey, how much do you know about True Colors, if anything?
I know a couple things. I know it's the fourth or fifth installment in the Life is Strange universe. I know it follows a young woman who happens to be a critter like me. I know she is a fan of Critical Role in the game.
Oh, I was not aware that that's what you were called. I thought that was like a fetish that you were digging into.
Maybe it is. Who knows? No, but and I know it's a game primarily focused on how you described it last week, but on empathy and emotions towards others. And those are really the big things I know. And it is a much more smaller scale down to earth compared to what I know of what the first game was, because I've played the first game, of which had much more that's not the right word for it, but that game had more a large world overview of this is a big thing, while True Colors is more of small but also affecting people's individual worlds.
So also to preface this as well, we don't have plans to spoil the original Life is Strange, but I would say if you are listening to this and have played True Colors but haven't played the first one, and you were interested in playing the first one without any sort of spoilers going into that, probably don't listen to this, because there will probably be some comparisons and some things could get spoiled for you. So I just want to say that on the top end. But for Corey's sake,
it's a short one.
Yeah. So True Colors is Alex Chen. She is the protagonist that you start out with. She, the story starts essentially of her leaving a facility, like, you know, she came up in the system, her and her brother did. And so, you know, she's leaving one of these homes, one of these facilities, to go live with her brother, who has established a life in Colorado. She arrives in Colorado, introduces herself, learns all these kind of things, like begins building these relationships. And on the first day, the boy in the town, Ethan, the son of the girl that your brother dates, goes up into the mountains and on kind of his own personal adventure, despite there being warnings posted all over that the local mining facility is going to be doing a scheduled, basically blasts in the area to clear mines. And, you know, so it's dangerous, you know, people, anybody up there could get hurt. So Alex, her brother Gabe, and then his friend Ryan, they go looking for Ethan. They find Ethan, save Ethan, but to back up, prior to going up there, they call the facility, ask them to postpone the explosion. They say that they will. They go up, they find Ethan, they save Ethan, the blast still goes off, and the rock slide that ensues kills Alex's brother, Gabe. Which was something that, like, I was not aware of this, given how little I was paying attention. Apparently, this was in the marketing material. That the central plot revolves around Gabe's death was a big part of, you know, what was kind of pushed in the material. I was not aware of it. It came as a genuine shock to me. But he dies, and the primary kind of conflict there is figuring out what exactly happened.
Right.
Because, you know, from your understanding, Gabe called the local authorities. They told him they would postpone it. They didn't. He died because of that. And so a lot of the game kind of bounces between her trying to figure that out and her trying to also just continue establishing herself in this town as her own person. Because, I mean, she arrived in the town first day, her only connection to the town, her brother, dies.
Right.
And so that is, I think, one of the big core differences between the original Life is Strange and this. And I can't go off of comparison from, like, Life is Strange 2 or anything like that, but, like, the big thing with True Colors is that it really does, it centers around that very basic thing. You know, it's not a murder mystery, but it is a mystery that needs to be solved. And it's very simple, small town life. The original with Max, her power played so much into the central conflict. Like, yeah, there were conflicts. Yeah. She was trying to wind back time and actively, like, prevent things from happening or stop things from happening. And the result of that played into the larger conflict.
Yep.
But in True Colors, it's very much a thing where Alex's powers, so the empathy powers that she has in the game, essentially allow her to, I mean, for lack of a better way of putting it, like, empathize with people.
Yeah.
You know, she's able to read their feelings in a way and also feel what they're feeling. So, you know, whenever they're up in the mountains, you know, Ethan in the scenario, he's very into role playing. He's been on this adventure.
Yeah.
He believes he's been cornered by this monster, and Alex, in trying to save him, kind of, you know, takes on some of that fear and actively sees the monster, sees this fear, experiences the same things that he's experiencing. And so the big difference there is that the original Life is Strange, like, her powers played into the larger conflict. You know, her doing things and making changes and all of these things played into what was actively happening. And in True Colors, Alex's influence, her, like, who she is not actively ruining or... not that it's not bettering, but it's not the cause of the conflict. Like, she is not the central driver behind why... She has no impact on why Gabe died. Like,
right.
And that's the core of it, is like, you know, she could have not shown up. Gabe probably still would have died. Like,
yeah,
that's just the way that it is. And I think it's an interesting dynamic because Alex is like, Alex's whole thing, you know, Max in the original Life is Strange is very, she's an awkward teen dealing with bullying and dealing with all these kind of things. Alex, you know, is a early 20s-ish person who's gone through orphanages and gone through like group homes and gone through foster care and, you know, has gone through a lot of things and is actively trying to, she's not just coming up like any other kid. She's, you know, gone through what should have been like very establishing, you know, fundamental points of her life and wasn't able to establish those things. And is now in a point where she's landing, loses her only like tether and has to establish herself here through, I mean, her powers, obviously, but it's largely like the experiences that she's having is just, you know, it's not a result of her doing anything. It's a result of her having to react again after all this time to some of the things that have happened to her. So I say all that to say, you know, my thoughts will continue to tie in as we go along. But, you know, from then on, like, most of the plot doesn't really, like, the original Life is Strange had, like, big moments that happen, like, big reveals, big stuff, just constant. Like, maybe not constant, but, like, end of chapters.
I mean, yeah.
And I went into it with some of those expectations. There's a lot less of that here. The big things that, you know, Alex and Ryan and Steph and the people who were actively kind of pursuing this kind of come to understand is that the event, this blast, happened not by accident. Like, you know, Gabe made the phone call. Gabe gets in touch with somebody. They hear him. And the request is relayed. It's just ignored.
Right.
And, you know, what they come to find out is that the blast that was taking place, the reason it had to go off when it did was because it was covering up for another blast. They were blasting somewhere else that they needed.
Weren't supposed to?
Basically, they were setting off a second explosion that they were covering with the first explosion. If they didn't set off the first explosion, then people would know that there was a second explosion somewhere else that still went off and there would be investigation. So it was a decision on the part of this kind of corporate mining entity that this was more important. The thing that starts to play out as you get further along. So one of the main characters, who's seen as kind of like a, reminds me a lot of like a J.K. Simmons father figure. Like, he's, you know, if you think of like J.K. Simmons from Juno, where he's like bearded and wearing flannel and stuff like that.
Would you believe me if I said I've never seen Juno?
Have you never seen Juno?
I've never seen Juno.
Oh my gosh. So what do you know J.K. Simmons from then?
Well, I know J.K. Simmons, as in J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah, less J. Jonah Jameson.
He's Omni-Man in Invincible.
He is also Omni-Man. Okay.
Well, I just saw Palm Springs, and he's in Palm Springs.
Yeah, he is. He's also very good in Palm Springs.
That's a great movie.
Okay, let's stick with the Omni-Man comparison.
Oh,
actually,
yikes.
Shit.
Yikes.
Okay.
I mean, he's in a ton of stuff.
Let me just say that.
Whiplash?
You know, we're not going to dig into Invincible spoilers here, but let me say that for you to just draw a comparison for a second.
Okay.
So there's a character named Jed who reminds me of J.K. Simmons, like very much just kind of like in tone and kind of stature. And he's Ryan's dad and Gabe's past employer. You know, he runs this bar. And is seen as kind of like this father figure, very like soft, warm. And in this community, previously he had been like a mining, like a foreman in the mines.
Okay.
And there are plaques that are kind of put up all over about, you know, many years before he had saved all of these miners from a cave-in. You know, you hear this story kind of told that, this was kind of this location, this old, like, kind of shuttered mining facility. He had saved this, you know, 15 men, you know, all this kind of stuff. And so the big thing that's kind of the, I guess after that point, one of the big things in the plot that starts to kind of come out is that you are essentially being, Alex begins to get pressure. She essentially gets blackmailed by the corporate office that if she doesn't stop, then she'll go to jail. Because up until this point, she is like stolen information. She has like done, I mean, illegal things to get some of this stuff, but in service of like what she's trying to prove. And they've essentially said like, we will press charges. You will go to jail unless you say you will never say anything bad about us again. So, you know, you have the choice to kind of whether or not to do that. Right. But either way, it kind of progresses on to where you kind of like confide in Jed and say like, you know, all this stuff's going on. I'm really kind of upset about it. Jed tells Alex that he knows what's going on, what the issue is, takes you up to one of these old mines that he's familiar with, and he shoots Alex and dumps her down a mine shaft. And the progression there, you know, that going into the final chapter is kind of the I guess culmination of those events, like the whole reason, you know, and I apologize, listeners, for anybody who's like, I'm just giving a recap. I'm framing everything. We'll dig into some of the analysis a little bit more, but like, you know, the framing there being that Jed, in his original heroic, escapade, he actually, you know, knew of some risks that were happening that were potentially going to cause a cave-in, did it anyway, pushed his men further, it caves in, some of his men are trapped, some of his men are not, he actively chooses to abandon the ones who are trapped and leaves. He makes a deal with the corporation that they will kind of like cover it up and, you know, we'll kind of pay him off and they'll frame it as him being a hero. And that's kind of fine for years and years. But they come up on a point where they're supposed to have an inspection. They have to hide the evidence. And so we're scheduling this blast to cover up the fact that there was this like neglect. There was this cave-in that happened that could have been prevented. And so that's what all of this kind of revolves around. It's a very... At the core of it, Life is Strange, True Colors is a very simple, just kind of like corporate cover-up story. Like, it's nothing huge in that regard. It's no, like, you know, this... I don't know. There's not this huge mystical apocalyptic thing. It's just, here is this kind of, like, dirty scandal that was covered up in this small, idyllic,
right,
Coloradan town. But, so, when I got to the end of the game, you emerge from the mine. One of the big revelations that you find in the mine, so during chapter 5, a lot of it is kind of like Alex drifting back and forth between old memories and kind of like conversations that she's having with Gabe, like,
right, yeah,
essentially kind of like dead Gabe now, yeah, kind of like imploring her to dig further into her past, and her just kind of like progressing in the mines and trying to get out. And what you see and what's kind of laid out is like Alex and Gabe's mother dies of cancer. Mm-hmm. And when she's young, you know, like not quite a teenager, 10-ish, yeah, 8 to 10 range. The dad ends up, you know, feeling the stress of it, fights with Gabe all the time, ends up just walking out on them, just leaves them. Yeah. And essentially is like, the system will do better for you. I'm gone. What you discover in the last chapter is that one of the miners that Jed had left in the mine to die was Alex's and Gabe's dad. He had ended up there working and was a part of that. And the, you know, it's not explicitly stated, but there are enough like collectibles and things to find that kind of lay out that Gabe arrived in Haven Springs to find their dad. Like, right, he had tracked him down there, tracked the leads, but couldn't find him, essentially. Like, he had disappeared. And that was because of it. It was because many years before he had just gotten buried in this mine. Like,
right,
the lead just kind of stopped there. So he set up life and ended up being there and whatever. And Jed knew this, but essentially was just kind of like, okay, one day I'll tell him. One day we'll hash it out. One day, you know. But that's kind of the central driving force. Is like, you know, now you know that, like, Gabe had come there looking for your dad. The man who essentially, through neglect, had let their dad die, knew what he was there for, also caused his death,
yeah,
and also, I mean, inexplicably caused his death and tried to murder you. And so, you know, it comes to a point, essentially, where it's like, I'm not sure what range of endings there are. I think the end conclusion is largely the same. Okay. Is that Jed feels the guilt and like you essentially kind of like dig deep into him and have this like empathetic kind of connection with him, and he essentially breaks and confesses, and you know, things, yeah, kind of set right. The big, I think, differing points in the endings are how the townspeople kind of interact with you during that lead up, and the aftermath, and also what you do afterwards.
Okay.
And the, so, you know, at this point, we're however far in, we're 20 minutes in, we're talking about, you know, kind of recapping all of this stuff, but the big thing that I took away, because like the story of life of True Colors, honestly, like, whenever it comes from the spectacle or the surprise or, you know, kind of the stuff that you might be expecting going into it, it's not there in the same way the original Life is Strange was.
Yeah.
You know, the original Life is Strange, spoilers on this end, but there's, you know, there's a teacher who's drugging and, yep, like sexually abusing children. Like, there's all of this, like, there's this stuff, like, there's a big apocalypse, there's all this, like, there's, you know, you're seeing
a lot,
you're seeing alternate
issues
pasts
happening,
where, yeah, right, you're seeing alternate presence where like your best friend is in a vegetative state basically, and, yep, like, you know, like, there's big stuff that's happening. And by and large, there isn't so much of that. But so much of what it is like, you know, you get to the end of the game, and when I got to the end, you're in a council meeting, and they're kind of taking a vote to decide, because at this point, the corporation is trying to have the town council vote on whether or not they want Typhon is the name of the company to stay and further grow in their community. And so you're trying to say like, hey, no, they're bad. Like, stick up with me, you know, whatever. And in mine, the four council members, out of the four council members, Steph and Ryan, who are your best friends in this, two of them took my side. One of which I think is guaranteed. So essentially, like, I got one person to say, like, I believe you. You're like, we're standing with you. He tried to kill you. I get it. Like, and it felt like a bad ending. Like, in that regard, it felt like a bad ending because, I mean, some of these people that you had built these relationships with, they just kind of, you know, that's almost kind of like the last moment that you see them. Even in all the epilogue stuff, it's not like, oh yeah, you guys made up and it's as if that was the last time you ever spoke to them in your whole life. Mm-hmm. And it was this very like affecting thing where it's like, okay, like the game is communicating to me. And I kind of alluded to this a little bit whenever I was talking about it on the podcast, but like the game is kind of alluding to the fact that like you should have done something differently to get the good ending where everyone loves you and everybody's happy and you know everything's right. Like you should have done things differently.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a few key moments during the game that affect people's perceptions of you.
Okay.
And that's in each of those council members have something there that relates to that. And two of them specifically, like, I think stood out to me. And two of them I did differently, or I approached differently, but still was communicated to at the end that they may have been the wrong choice. So,
okay.
In the middle of the game, you have a conversation with Gabe's, I guess, ex-girlfriend at this point, the mother of the boy who gets, you know, mm-hmm. lost at the beginning. And she essentially kind of confides that she hates Alex. She hates her son for doing this. She's mad. She's angry. Like, she hates everybody, everything, hates herself, and like is just furious about everything. And you have the option at that point to leave, just be like, okay, peace out, like deal with this yourself, or to take her anger away, like literally strip her of it. And it was a thing where in the moment, you know, I made the decision to take the fear because I mean, my legitimate worry was if I just walk out, like thinking like a human person, you're in this moment, they're, you know, crumbling, they're having this, and you just walk out. Like, the implication was that you just open the door and leave. I was like, what would happen there? Like, what would she do? Would she potentially hurt herself in some sort of way?
Right.
Could I be responsible for, like, something going wrong here? And so in my mind, despite it, you know, clearly ringing out as unethical, I was like, I'm going to take her fear. I'm going to go that route because at least I'm like actively doing something.
Right.
And it was something that pretty immediately, and as the game went on, you kind of learn was not the right decision because she essentially becomes like a zombie. Like, she feels nothing after that. Like, she's just apathetic.
Yeah.
You know, she's a career artist who kind of like lives on emotion and she just feels nothing. She can't like make anything anymore. And she basically like that worst case scenario kind of seems more possible at this point because of just her being like
originally.
Right. And so after that, you're faced with a similar opportunity. A police officer in the town who is afraid of taking action against the Typhon Mining Company, you have the option to sign the affidavit that where you will not like defame or speak ill of the company, or you can take his fear and make him not afraid.
Okay.
And it was another thing where it was like, I learned from my last mistake. I chose not to take his fear, and so that I didn't make him a husk of a human person. But then, you know, at the end of the game, he's too afraid to actually help me.
Right.
It's a thing where had I taken the fear, like,
yeah,
had I left the mother alone, she would have sided with me because she wouldn't have just been apathetic. But right, had I taken the fear away from him, he wouldn't have been afraid. And he would have stood up and been, you know, a brave boy. but it was a thing, like, it was this thing where I think one of the strongest things that I can say about True Colors is that, like, in... when you play a game, and games in general have been going more this direction, but when you play a game like Mass Effect or something,
yeah,
there are the clear, like, this is good, this is bad.
Yep.
And even then, it's not even like the gray areas. It's just like, do you want to save the children or do you want to just like murder these children?
Yeah.
Like, which do you want to do? Like, there's no...
do you want to bring the criminal in to face justice, or do you want to throw him out the window and laugh maniacally?
Right. I mean, and with True Colors, it is a thing where I got to the end, and normally in that instance where you get to the end, because at that point, like, you're... the big thing that the game kind of impresses upon you is that, like, regardless of what your choice, like, you have the choice at the end of the game with Alex to leave Haven Springs and travel and set up somewhere else, to stay, set up life there. You have all these choices, but it very much kind of communicates that Alex now is the agent in her own life.
Right.
Where so many things have happened to her. She's never been able to make decisions in this way. She now has the choice, regardless of what it is. She gets to
decide,
make the way forward.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as it kind of plays out these vignettes, I mean, there are plenty of people missing from that. There are people, you know, it talks about like people seeing her, like being there for her and in these big moments and everything. And like, there are plenty of people that were not there because of like, because of the way that things played out, because of choices that I made, it just broke that relationship. But it was this thing where I think even more so than the first game, there were, every choice seemed good and bad. Just like, you know, the mother, like, leaving her seemed cruel and potentially disastrous, and stripping her of her emotion seemed unethical.
Right.
You know, it seemed very much like, I think it emulated real life in kind of a, in an impressive way in mm-hmm. that regard, because it did kind of look at it as, I didn't know. Like, I couldn't like consciously judge what direction my choices were going to take me. I didn't know if I chose this, that this obviously was going to happen, and she obviously was going to be okay, and she obviously was going to be my friend and whatever. It was just, I had to make the decision that felt right in the moment.
Right.
Even whenever it was, even if it was considered wrong by the game, by the end, or even if I myself like looked at it and was like, okay, that sucked. Like that wasn't the right thing to do.
This is the least worst of the two worst options.
Right. And so that, I mean, honestly, like that was the thing when I finished the game and I stepped back and was thinking about it. That was the way that it most affected me, was thinking about like the fact that, you know, here was this girl who had, again, who had like begun to make a life for herself and had been thrown many like shitty things to deal with, even over the course of the story, much less like everything that had happened before it. And, you know, she was dealing with it the best that she could. And I felt, you know, reasonably at peace with the way that the game went. Like, I mean, after the game's over, you know, you would assume the mother of the boy, like, she's probably kind of a zombie forever. Yeah. And like, that doesn't feel great. And there's another character who has dementia, who's essentially kind of hiding it so that her adoptive daughter will go on to school and not worry about her.
Yeah.
You know, in mine, because of a choice that I made, I didn't actively tell the daughter, but she found out about it because of me, and I lost the trust of the older woman because of that. And so, like, but again, it was this thing where I was like, okay, what do you do? What is the choice? What is the right thing to do in this scenario? And I don't know, like, games like this, I do appreciate playing through and examining sometimes, because it is like, I don't know. I mean, it feels weird whenever you're thinking, like, this feels almost kind of like just a vignette of real life. But it does. Like, it feels like you're playing through kind of like a worst case scenario of something that could actually happen in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I feel like with True Colors, again, I don't have experience with Life is Strange 2 or some of the other ones, but it feels like to me, like it is, True Colors is kind of like that fullest realization of the name,
right?
Life is Strange, that things can happen and things can go a number of different ways. And, you know, you don't really know, you can't really tell.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, it was like, it isn't, and that's the thing, is like, that was kind of my main thing wanting to come in and have that conversation, was because, like, there aren't a bunch of huge revelations. It's not a bunch of like, oh crap, did you see that? Like, there are a couple of them, you know, Jed being
the
a
bad
murderer.
Guy. Yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean, you don't really see that coming. I mean, I think there were a couple of hints. There were a couple of things where I was like, maybe there's something a little bit like wrong there. That's whenever, yeah, he plays in the third chapter. It's basically like this big LARP where you're playing as RPG characters and you're playing like turn-based battles and stuff. And Jed plays a king, like a nice king who turns out to be the bad guy. And in my head, I was like, oh,
that's a little bit.
I was like, I wonder if that's, that happens. Yeah. and it did. Yeah, I mean, I think by and large, like, it's a story that feels very just simple and extremely personal, but I don't know, it just was very, it affected me in that way. Like, it wasn't anything revelatory, but it was just something where I got to the end and I was like, I don't feel great about some of the things that happened, but I feel at peace with the way that things went.
Yeah.
And I feel like sometimes that's what life is. Like, you
feel like you did the best you could in very difficult and very tense situations.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that you can't have regrets. It doesn't mean that you didn't, like,
doesn't mean you're a bad person.
You couldn't have done something Right. Doesn't mean that you couldn't have done things better or that you are bad for having done something wrong. But, you know, it's a point of examination. It's a point to, you know, that you can look at and just be like, I mean, I'm human. I did it the best I could. And, you know, I learned from it going forward. And maybe it's better next time. Maybe it's not. But, yeah. You know, you keep learning and you keep growing. And that's what, you know, that's what being a human person is. And, I enjoyed it. I think True Colors was, it made me more interested in playing future Life is Strange games.
Do you think you'll go
significantly
back
more
and play the previous ones? Or do you feel like since you have played the first one and I've played the first one and it's so much more of a, I don't want to say not personal, but a little bit, you know, broader ideas compared to how you've described this as a very, almost like a character piece and a, you know, coming of age situation. Do you think
right
that this is just the pinnacle or the essence of what you wanted for Life is Strange and that's what you're looking for going forward and you don't care to go back for what is kind of the more bigger and broader ideas that they have had?
I think,
sorry,
I mean,
that was a mouthful of a question.
I am hopeful in looking at this that, like, regardless of what the, like, grand arc of a future Life is Strange game is, that they will continue to take at least those elements, like, make it more personal, make it more affecting on the, like, human personal side, even if they want to dig into the, you know, big apocalyptic, like, scenarios. That being said, like, I'm not super interested in going back specifically to Before the Storm, which was, like, the prequel
right.
to the original Life is Strange. There is a character, I was not aware of this, but there is a character who shows up in Before the Storm who is one of the main characters in True Colors.
Interesting.
So I did not know that there was that connection, but that exists. I have heard though that Life is Strange 2 is a good one to experience. It has a similar tone in some ways to True Colors because it is a from the limited amounts that I know, you know, it's a brother.
Is that brother's
Hispanic
story? Yeah.
It's brothers I think going north, like leaving home, driving north, and I think that there's obviously some like racist kind of stuff that it tackles and, you know, some of the like xenophobic stuff that
right.
we've had in the world over the last couple of years. Like that's, I mean, I say that in the world over the last like existence of history, but you know, that's been most notable over the last couple of years. I've heard that that is also a very like personal story. And so that is something that I would potentially, I mean, this makes me want to at least go back and experience that because I am interested in the story that it tells on that end. But yeah, I mean, it's I very much enjoyed the first Life is Strange and had, you know, a lot of extensive thoughts. Like I remember writing my thoughts out yeah. and like being very like having kind of extensive thoughts about the first one. But you know, as more of them came out, I didn't feel the desire to really dig into them
right.
The way that it did with the first one. And this, I think, makes me much more likely to both go back and to keep up with the series going forward. Mm-hmm. So,
what would you say? I mean, you talked a lot about the moment with the girlfriend and mother, but what is the moment that stuck out to you? You know, you've talked to me about this game a lot and, you know, we're here doing kind of this deep dive on it. What is the moment or why is it that this game, outside of, you know, the fact that it is a very personal and emotionally driven story, but what about it has really just stuck with you? Like, what is this lasting? Like, what are in your mind, were you like clinging to with it of why it's made such an impact?
Yeah. I mean, I think the big like decisions that you have to make specifically to, because like I said at the start, like Alex's powers don't affect
the game,
the live, right. They don't affect, they really don't even affect the lives of the people they're touching much. Up until a certain point. Like in most cases, it's something that Alex is able to experience and wrestle with on her own that informs her own decisions in her own life, but it doesn't directly affect anybody. And it isn't until you, I keep calling her the mother. Her name's Charlotte, is the mother of Ethan, the son. You know, it isn't until the moment with Charlotte that like you are in a position where you're like, okay, I can now take something from you. I can affect your life. And it was this thing, like, I think it did round this corner at a certain point where it was like, okay, in this position, you know, you're in this position to make a direct change to like, I'm going to, now I have a power, like thinking about yourself and saying like, now I have this power. Now I can affect change. I can do this thing. All of a sudden I can take something away or leave it be. Like, what would I choose and why? And I think that that was like, I think you get to that point and you're seeing everything kind of, again, you're seeing Alex getting to a point of ownership and agency in her own life and seeing, you know, what, seeing the good and the bad of what that power could look like in somebody's eyes who has been out of control, has not had any control in her own life. Like, how would she lean into that or not? Like, would she decide to be like, okay, now anytime anything doesn't go my way, I can just take it away. This person's mad at me, I take it away. This person's sad and I don't like it, I take it away. And like, you know, I think that there, I think that there was this real moment where it was like this, I don't think the overarching story really cared one way or the other, but it was this thing where thinking about a human person in this instance, like what kind of villain origin story could I be telling or not at this moment? And not even that, but just like looking at the trajectory, like what is this girl, where is she going to go from here? Like, what decisions will she consciously make and which decisions will she consciously choose to not make, for the betterment of like her friends, her community, in the world in general. That was the stuff, like those sections really kind of hit me the hardest, I think, because they like, you were starting to see that shift and you were starting to see the potential for her to like lean too much into, go swing from one end of the pendulum to the other, where it's, I'm out of control, now I'm all, now I am the control, now I am, you know, so.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, the more I think about how you describe the power, especially towards the end, where you can essentially take people's emotions from them, which initially sounds like, oh, that is, like, you can stop people from feeling like, you know, the utmost sadness or utmost like despair, but you could also take away people's like joy, people's pride. And like, that is, comparing it to the first game, apocalyptic levels in of itself. You know, all it takes is to take the joy or the drive from a doctor who could discover a cure to like cancer or something along those lines. And that is a extremely volatile power when you think of it in the grand scheme of things and of like how someone could use it for wrong. And then in a little scale of how you described and some of the decisions that you've said, where it's like, here is a moment where I kind of think I should have done it differently, of just the such small impact that it also has on Charlotte's life and then Ethan's life from there going forward. I don't know.
And I think
just intriguing.
No.
That's all I have.
Yeah. I mean, And I think, too, the story really does kind of take its own... It has its own path in mind. It doesn't, like, try to make Alex out as, like, a villain. It takes that path of getting to the point, because at the end, I mean, essentially, like, her, you know, she gets to this point with Jed where she's having this very, like, empathic connection there. And, you know, I think that there is the implication that, oh, she could just wreck him and, like, make him a vegetable, essentially. And you're given the choice, like, do you forgive him or you condemn him? And it isn't a choice of, like, you're actively doing something to him, because I would imagine on either side, he's still confessing. He's feeling the weight of his own sins and everything. But it is the act of, like, what is Alex doing internally? Like, how is she choosing to, you know, bookend this and move forward? Is she choosing to forgive in her heart this man who has, like, caused her pain, significant pain in this time? Or is she choosing to, you know, basically say, like, big fuck you, you know, you deserve all of the sadness and brokenness. And, like, it's an active thing where, like, she's not breaking him. You're not deciding, like, oh, I'm going to actively, like, ruin his life or whatever. But it is this thing. I mean, it's similar to, like, old mantras about, like, you know, you choose to forgive somebody, like, you know, toxicity in your heart and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Like, resentment is only hurting you. Like, those sort of things that people talk about. And it's that kind of thing. Like, it very much kind of paints it out as, like, you're getting to this point and Alex, regardless of the trajectory, realizes what she wants the most. Is she wants to, like, move on and be healthy. And, like, you know, you're choosing how you process that. Like, again, do you forgive? Do you not forgive? But by and large, she's at the point, she's like, I'm done. I'm out. Yep. You know, I am not going to be, my hurt and my life is not going to be directly affected by you or other people anymore. Like, I'm choosing my own path. I'm choosing my agency. And it is, like, I think that that's the right call.
Yeah.
Because I think it could have gone in a direction where it was like, do you, like, fry his brain or do you not fry his brain?
Yeah.
And, you know, in that, that wasn't the story that it was trying to tell.
No.
It wasn't a villain origin story. It was, like, this girl growing in herself, like, her growing to a point of ownership to where she's actively becoming the agent of her own life and direction and existence. And, like, and I think that they do that well, like, you know, it, because then it comes down to the same choice that we're able to make anytime anybody wrongs us.
Yes.
Like, do we forgive? Do we not forgive? And how we handle those things in our own hearts and minds, like, will they necessarily affect somebody else? No, but they will absolutely affect us in the way that we, like, process things and the way that we move forward. And we do have to have some sort of agency over, like, our own feelings and our own emotions and how we process things in that way. So, yeah. Very, very good game. Very powerful game. I enjoyed it.
Any final thoughts or words on Life is Strange, True Colors?
No. Soundtrack slaps. Slaps a big booty. I liked it a lot. Admittedly, I mean, I think that's one of Life is Strange as a, like, series, quote unquote, like, strong points is their, like, soundtrack, their whole vibe. Like, they really do have a good grasp of the mood that they're trying to set.
Yeah.
So very good in that regard. I liked a lot of the, like, LARP stuff and a lot of the, you know, it was just kind of, it's fun. Like, it's because it's a lot of like you're collecting items and you're actually going into turn-based battles and you're doing like all this kind of stuff, and it feels like it's kind of a nice fun break. And there's a lot of that, like just kind of, you know, nice little vignettes, fun little events, stuff like that. And I don't know, I enjoyed it a lot. Look for more conversations about it in our Goaty discussions, yeah. I'm sure.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I'm excited for that. Couple weeks.
Yeah.
Two weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any more questions about True Colors, Corey?
How much Critical Role was in this? Yeah, this definitely determines how soon I play this.
Critical Role itself, I think zero.
I kid.
When it comes to general D&D style role playing,
yeah,
a whole heck of a lot. Oh, it's very much in the veins of this.
That's all I needed.
It's very much in the veins of most of the characters in the game. So,
oh, beautiful. That's all I needed to hear. Yeah. Sold.
You would enjoy that aspect a lot. Like, you would enjoy, because I mean, like, the Ethan has his own comic and like really acts out this stuff.
Beautiful.
You know, they have the LARPing scenarios. They have like dice trays and they do they do a lot of the
let's go
stuff. They do a lot of the stuff, yeah. Corey. They do the stuff. And
that's all I need here. I've already bought it. There we go.
Yeah. 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 There you go. Good job. Alrighty, everybody. Well, that's a spoiler cast. That's our they're fun. We like to do them here and there. Spoiler cast, what are we gonna call it? Fireside spoilies.
Honestly?
Yeah, like
that's not too bad. It's not too bad.
Fireside spoilies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just had it off the top of my head. I said it earlier in the episode. It was off the top of my head then. No,
if we could get spoileries to sound closer to like s'mores or something like that, like fireside s'mores, yeah. Fireside spoileries,
spores,
spores. We'll figure it out. We'll nail it down soon.
But yeah, I don't know.
I think we're definitely on the right track with that.
I think so. Yeah. But Corey, we don't have to do our typical sign off stuff. Nah. The people who are listening to this, they know we're about.
They follow us.
Yeah. If not, if you're just listening for this, go listen to our regular episode. What are you doing?
Yeah,
like this is yeah. But we will have a regular episode for you guys next week.
Yes.
We are going to be talking about more end of the year discussions. At this point, you know, I know spoiler cast is a little nebulous in time, but you know, we're at the end of 2021. We're getting to the end of our Goaty discussions and things like that, or, you know, we're going to be beginning them. We're getting ready for that kind of stuff. So look forward to more of that as we get on for the rest of the month. But Corey, I hope you enjoyed having True Colors just spoiled to crap for you.
It is a very different game than what I thought it was. And honestly, it makes it intrigues me more to actually go play it, because it is not what I thought it was. So kudos.
You should. I think you would enjoy it. Yeah.
Well, there we go. Well, I guess.
All right, Square Enix. I just sold another copy for you.
There you go. May 2022. Mm. Check out our Life is Strange spoiler cast part 2.
Oh yeah. We'll hit it again. Let's go. But Corey, I hope that you have a wonderful time after this episode.
I'm going to bed.
Weekend, week, week.
No, I'm actually probably going to play a little bit more Pokemon. I caught a Feebas. So.
Oh, look at you.
Now I have to find all the berries.
Gonna get the Milotic.
Yeah, now I gotta get a bunch of berries.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But until then, Corey, I want to hear more about your Pokemon later. Until then, I hope that you sleep very well, sir.
You as well, good sir. You as well.
Alrighty.
Love you, bud.
We love you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.